Blog Talk Radio.
This is The Open Door. I have left an open door before you, which no one can close. This is Bob Olson, Catholic lay evangelist, along with lay evangelist Evelyn Olson and Dr. Rhonda Chervin, noted Catholic philosopher, author, and college professor. The open door is open to growing in love, open to the love of God, and open to joining His stream of love for others.
And welcome to another edition of The Open Door, and we have with us another philosophy professor, Dr. Richard Garrity in Birmingham, Alabama, and Commander Al in Corpus Christi, Texas, the Paradise Commander. And Dr. Rhonda, of course, is in Cromwell, and actually I'm in Middletown, which is the town next door. So we have a wonderful thing prepared for you tonight. This was done by Commander Al. It is a short piece that he wrote for one of his newsletters that he's involved in. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Al, and you can set the stage for us.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, this was an incident that happened, I'm not sure when, about 30 years ago, maybe a little further back. But a couple of friends of ours, Bob and Jody Wilfong, and my wife and I were sailing on Bob's boat, and we docked at Marsh Harbor in the Bahamas on a Saturday night. Marsh Harbor is down near the east end of Grand Bahama. And the following morning, Sunday, we got up early and went ashore to see if there was a church anywhere in the neighborhood. And just happened the dockmaster was standing out there, and he pointed over to his left and said, "Follow those folks. They know the way." And sure enough, there was a little group of Bahamians walking away from us on a shell road. They were heading in back of the marina office and the restaurant there, out into the palmettos and scattered palms and pines. It's pretty rough territory on a very flat shell island. So anyway, we ran and caught up with them, and these Bahamians, small group, they welcomed us like long-lost friends. And so we joined in the gang, and we're walking up the road. And as we walked along, the Bahamians started to sing spiritual songs, and some of them did a little impromptu dancing and telling jokes and just laughing and greeting other people who were coming in off of side paths from their little huts where they lived. And they were joining us as we processed up the road, and kind of a dancing and laughing and just very joyful. And sure enough, our little group doubled, and then it redoubled. And so by the time we found a little country church up the end of the road, we had pretty big group of people. The church was just a typical little country church, very small, unpainted, kind of a box building affair with a little steeple on it. And that was about it. You've seen little country churches, I'm sure, kind of like that. We had to stop and wait for a priest to show up with a key so we could get inside. And the Bahamians and the four of us, we tried to talk and share with each other, but they were speaking in a dialect, a patois, if you will. I didn't hear many English words in that. It sounded like it was mostly a mix of African and French, but who knows? So anyway, it was mostly just point and name and smile and shake hands, and that was about all we could do. And then the singing picked up again just before the priest, who was also Bahamian, he arrived, and we crowded in to the church. The interior of that church was very bare, just plank benches, unpainted, and the walls and flooring. There's no paint anywhere, no statues, no pictures, no glass windows. Just had shutters that they opened to let some of the air flow through. the only paint that we saw was some very faded paint on the altar itself, and not much of that either. So anyway, everybody settled down into the, you know, on these plank benches. We were sitting about three rows from the back, and the mass began. More singing, lots of boisterous singing, and that same patois, and lots of raised hands and praises, and the mass was off and running. But at the incident that was so unusual started at the beginning of the homily. Just as the priest started to speak, this baby just to our right started crying, really, you know, really raising a ruckus. And the mother, instead of trying to quiet the child, she just immediately handed the baby to the person on her left. And that person kind of rocked the baby just a little and then passed it to the next person on the left. And that baby traveled all over the church, back and forth on every row on these benches. And after about three or four people, the baby stopped crying. And by the time that baby got back to its mother at the end, near the end of the homily, it was sound asleep.
Yeah,
so,
wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Then after, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that was beautiful.
Yeah. So after the Mass, everything kind of reversed. You know, the coming to Jesus reversed. We all piled out of the church, and everybody was singing and laughing and dancing. And we headed back down that same road. And one by one, families broke off to take side paths and go to their little huts. So there was a lot of waving and goodbying as we processed, till finally we got back to the dock all by ourselves, just kind of amazed at what we had seen at that little church. I'd known from years earlier that masses everywhere, in the world, for that matter, are done the same way on a particular Sunday. The only difference is language. And I learned that even before my conversion, when I took my wife to a Mass. She was Catholic, and I took her to a Mass in French Martinique in the West Indies. And, of course, I could tell where we were in the Mass, even though they were speaking in French. So it's just, you know, that happens year round. But never have we encountered anywhere in the world such joy in the midst of poverty. All of these people so joyful at going to church and receiving the body and blood of Christ. Had never seen it before or since, quite in that joyful outburst, if you will. So anyway, the next morning, Sunday morning, after we got back to the dock, we left, set sail due north out of there, heading across the Grand Bank of Bahamas, heading over to Manawar Cay. And what was fascinating about that little trip across was that out to the west, off our port beam, there were three waterspouts, and they were dancing around just like the crowd had, dancing in a tight little circle off to the west, reminding us of all that joyful dancing and singing that we had witnessed on the road to Calvary.
Wow, quite an experience, huh?
Yeah, beautifully done. And
I'm very familiar with joyful charismatic masses, so that wasn't new to me. But this thing with the baby I loved, because in too often in our culture, the baby crying, first of all, the babies are shunted into the cry room in the back of the church so as not to disturb anyone. And then
or out the back door.
We're so individualistic that we think of it as the problem of that couple dealing with the baby, whereas here it's just obvious that they're all so close that the baby, you know, anyone could comfort that baby. I just love that. It reminded me of something I read about how in a village in Lebanon, when a baby is born in a house, as soon as the baby is wrapped up in the mother's arms or at the mother's breast, the whole village comes to, you know, look at the baby and pray for the baby and all that, you know. And I just think that's so wonderful compared to our highly privatized existence where even in church people don't know each other. You know, I just don't think that's good at all,
yeah,
to have churches where people,
yeah,
don't know each other. You know?
And you know that, yeah. Yeah, and that you know, what amazed me was that community sense that they had extended to us pale faces. You know, we held a baby too, you know. It's just nobody was left out. And there was absolutely no hint of any prejudice of any sort in that group. They just accepted us immediately. Even on the road, when we first encountered them, they accepted us like long-lost friends.
Yeah,
what a
that's
way to go,
the amazing thing is that kind of, you don't have a lot of verbal communication, or you know, but there is this acceptance on some general feeling, a real feeling, not just politeness, a real feeling of warmth. And it does seem to be among simpler people. For instance, I'm here living with a fellow by the name of Paul, and he's a Nigerian. And he's very devout, really devout, goes to church a lot. But every once in a while, we watch some things on the computer of a celebration in Nigeria, and the people are singing and laughing and dancing and moving and gesticulating. And I can see him sometimes bouncing up in sheer joy, you know. And to me, all that kind of joy associated with going to church, well, that's, I mean, I know what it is to go to church and be reverent, but this kind of joy and warmth, and I find that amazing. And of course, in the story, it's pretty obvious they're handling the baby around, and the baby goes to sleep. And of course, that's what's supposed to be happening in church. Christ comes to us. We receive him in communion. But this idea, handing the baby from person to person, and at the end of it, the baby is asleep and everybody's content. Now, that's communion really dramatized in a very ordinary event, and quite powerful.
Well, now,
go ahead,
Bob. No, go ahead.
Well, the thing that I thought of immediately was a service that I saw in a church. I can't remember where it was. I don't know if it was Chicago or Detroit or I can't remember now. But during this Mass, they had a baptism. And the baptism was part of the Mass, if I remember correctly. But anyway, all the people were in the church. And after the baptism, the party that was there, the mother and father and some of the relatives, they brought the baby down into the church. And they went all the way to the back of the church, and they came back and showed everybody the baby, and some of us were able to touch the baby's hands and say a little prayer. So it was kind of similar when I experienced that at this church. And to me, if, you know, it's a shame that we don't have more baptisms publicly, you know, instead of waiting when everybody's gone, and because it's something that builds up our faith, you know, just like what we saw here. And when we had an opportunity to see that the happiness of that couple bringing that baby up and down the aisle. So I'd
okay,
like to see
now
more couples.
You know, this varies greatly in every church I've been in. Every parish church, they have baptisms during the Mass. They start at the beginning. It's a longer Mass, but they first do certain rituals at the entrance of the church, then they bring them up to the baptismal font, and everybody just has to spend more time and rejoice in these babies. They usually have, you know, three or four at a time. And, you know, everybody claps when the babies are baptized. And so I think that's more the norm now that I've seen versus private baptism.
I had a similar experience. The quality of the mass or the ceremony was just... It was a different quality altogether. It hooked into the very earthy, human thing of a baby and all that entails. And it was done reverently with joy, but it really added to the dimension tremendously so.
Right. And the thing that when they actually brought the baby then down up and down the aisle and everybody got a close look at the baby, it was kind of like those people passing the baby from one to another. But you talk about joy. We had a conference in Detroit at the Silver Dome. That was the old covered stadium that the Detroit Lions used to play. In the National Football League, and we had a big conference there, and maybe I shared this story with you before, but I was up on the stage, and I was dancing and having a lot of fun, and it was just a lot of joy in the ceremony. And a couple of years later, this fellow I knew, I ran into him a couple of years later, he says, you know, when you were dancing on the stage at the Silver Dome, being so joyful and so forth, he said, that's the thing that brought me back to the church. So, and the Holy Father, of course, wrote that beautiful encyclical, the Joy of the Gospel, or the Gospel of Joy? So joy is a big thing, huh?
Well, you can see it at the Pope of the Philippines, you know, that whole spirit. I mean, And that's what he means by joy. And see, it's not the sort of joy like the little story that Al told. He ended up Calvary. I suggested make it a capital C. But all of this is done in this life, in this real life, where Calvary or suffering is just part of the deal. And it seems like the people... In the most impoverished or sections where they should be suffering horribly, I mean so horribly, you know, we want to rescue them, this paradox of great joy, being very close to real life. And the odd thing is, if you want to take it pound for pound, where do you really find more happiness? In the first world or in the third world. I mean, you know, real happiness now. Not, I don't mean just spiritual happiness. I mean just plain happiness. Where do you find it? And I think what Al is suggesting there is, well, he found it in some hut church in the Bahamas. Wow.
Yeah. I've seen that... also in Antigua, we were there for 2 years in the 70s. Back then, there was no TV, no radio, and people made their own entertainment and lived their own lives. And the life there was much simpler and also more joyful. Nowadays, I understand there's crime all over the... You know, we didn't even have locks on our doors. Nobody was worried about crime. There just wasn't any. And nowadays, I understand, you know, they're having home invasions and all kinds of crazy stuff going on because now they've got money. I think there's something to be said on the positive side for a little bit of poverty. You know, I guess maybe I'm going to have to disagree with Pearl Bailey. She said one time, if I can quote her, she said, I've been rich and I've been poor, and honey, rich is better.
Right.
But I'm not so sure that's true. I'm not so sure that rich is better.
Oh, you know, this is so clear when you read. I read a lot of old fiction from years back. And, you know, in small villages, like I've been reading a whole series by a Catholic English fiction novelist Sheila K. Smith, who wrote about Sussex in England between the two wars. And so in these farming communities, you know, any kind of dance that they had was so special and so exciting to everyone. Or you read about square dances in the United States years ago. You know, they still do square dancing, of course, in the United States. But, I mean, every little town had a violinist who would get up and play for square dancing, you know. And it was so wholesome compared to you have to go to a nightclub and, you know, pay $50 to park your car and in the cities, that kind of stuff, you know.
Right, right.
But on this joy in the mass, I wrote this, edited this book about polarities of the church. So one of the huge ones is you have these people who are reviving the extraordinary form of the mass in Latin with Gregorian chant and all that, and it's absolutely beautiful. On the other hand, they think that even they're, you know, these are people who believe that the English Mass is valid and all, but they would probably, you know, dislike this kind of Mass that Al was describing, yet I think it's wonderful. I don't see why we can't have all these things.
Yeah, and Rhonda, you mentioned charismatics. What I experienced in the Bahamas there is very similar to charismatic Masses, particularly the ones at Anaheim every year for the big conference once a year at Anaheim, you know, where you have 6,000 or 7,000 or 8,000 charismatics all celebrating Mass together. It has a similar feel to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, Richard, if you're feeling this desire to see this joy in the Mass, all you have to do is look for, like, on Pentecost Sunday, check the diocese you're in, and see where there's a charismatic Mass, and you can experience this, but also any charismatic group in the area probably has Masses that are like this.
Yeah, I guess. What happened to me is the pastor, I happened to go to, I forget, but maybe it was Holy Saturday or something, and they had a baptism, and they had babies, and so I've had other experiences where there are no babies, but this one with a baby, it just sort of put it on to another level. And I don't know. You didn't have to work up any enthusiasm. You could come in cold sober, but somehow the babies and the reaction, I mean, it had its effect. See? It's fascinating. It seems to me like if you get deeper into the human, and babies are about as human as you can get, there's a power in it.
Yep. Well, I had some other thoughts here, but it's getting toward the end of the program now. And Al, maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you're coming with your book, and you thought maybe that you might be able to share some of these things with us one of these days, huh?
Yeah, I'm in that chapter that I would like to use in one of these discussions, but I'm not nearly ready to do that. But I will say, and let me reach over behind me here. The book's not there. The source I'm using is Robert Spitzer. He just wrote a book. Title is "New Proofs for the Existence of God," and the subtitle is "Contributions from Physics and Metaphysics." And he points out that whereas for a couple of centuries there after Newton, the belief was that the universe had always been, and therefore there was no need or no likelihood of a creator. And my thesis in my own book is that that's what that's what started this slow but steady decline in religious participation in the Christian West. But now, within the last 100 years, even cosmologists are beginning to support the idea that there had to be a creator on two basic points. The first point being that there was a beginning to the universe. We all talk about the Big Bang theory nowadays, and that was a totally new idea in the 1920s and 30s. That there actually was a beginning to the universe, and if
you
there
know,
was,
there
then,
was a...
then you have to start thinking about the possibility of a creator. So anyway, that's the general topic of that sixth chapter, is springing off of Spitzer's work. But I thoroughly recommend his book to anybody that wants to struggle through it. The first third of the book, you need to know a little bit about mathematics, undergraduate math, to deal with the first third. And then the second and third third are all metaphysics, which are deductive reasoning. But it's a wonderful book. I recommend it.
Well, in the book, yeah. We have a book coming out, myself and Dr. Sebastian Mahfoud, who's the vice president here of administration, who's has many degrees in different subjects, but he's very into science. So we taught this course on it's called Catholic Realism, Framework for Refuting Atheism and Evangelizing Atheists. Anyway, he has a chapter about theism and science, where he makes a big deal out of the fact that one of the original people who talked about the Big Bang theory was a Catholic priest.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard, I saw someplace, there seems to be some kind of short movie out called In Principle, that in the scientific world, what seems to be shaking up that scientific world is that the cosmos, in a way, it's alive, it's something new, it's unexpected, it has its own way of moving, which is shocking people who are used to getting it down to laws and it's set and that's it forever. And they're finding out the cosmos, the non-living, is much more exciting and new and in a way unpredictable. And so it's shaking up the whole scientific community. It's like going from Newton to something a lot more open-ended. And, I didn't understand a lot of the language, but... they're getting a new vocabulary for it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Spitzer is saying that many cosmologists today are openly speaking of both creation and a creator.
Yeah.
And
wow.
A number of them are converting. Anyway, that's Spitzer's book, and my book tries to go back to the 19th century and find the roots of the problem that caused people to back away from Christianity.
And I think that hooks into that story with the baby. You have the baby, and it's the beginning of life, and everybody treats it like it's a big event, which it is, and you don't know what's going to happen, but it's sort of unpredictable, but in a marvelous, exciting way. It's not old stuff. You know, it's not like animals breeding. There's something new, and people can get that insight just looking at a baby. I mean, you don't have to look at the stars and the atoms and all that with a microscope or a telescope. I mean, it's something new and exciting happening right now in the most humble of circumstances. So there's an excitement to it, and I guess maybe the physicists are getting more excited these days. Maybe they're dancing around a bit. I don't know. Al, have you seen any?
I haven't seen any, no.
Oh, well, maybe it'll happen yet, I think.
Well, we're out of time.
You've got to be an intuitive. Richard, you got to be an intuitive to come up with that one.
Yeah, it seems like we did okay with your short newsletter piece there on a simple simple mass, huh?
Simple
so we did
paradise,
okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
so we'll
we
see
did.
You simple paradise. Right, so Paradise Commander, thank you for being with us, Dr. Richard, Dr. Rhonda, and we'll see you again next week, same time, same station, on The Open Door. In the meantime, God bless each and every one of you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Amen.